and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology, with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife, and author of the best-selling book, Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together, we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk, or alternatively, visit our website, balanceology.uk. Today's episode is all about WellTech, wellness technology, which is a huge market now for people who are looking at addressing their mental health and stress issues. WellTech comes in the form of many different apps that you may be familiar with, both helping you get off to sleep or monitoring your everyday fitness. But are they always the right solution for you? We're going to be talking about how a human connection and one-to-one work with individuals can be more beneficial than being more addicted to just yet another app that you think is doing you good, but it's actually doing you more harm. Hope you enjoy. Jane, episode number 28 of the Art of Balance podcast. And today we're going to be talking about WellTech. Now, I didn't know that was a phrase until when I was telling you what I thought we should talk about this week. You said, that's WellTech. And I was like, WellTech? And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was exactly what I was talking about. So I'd written an article earlier this week about how specifically well-being apps aren't always the right solution for something that you may be experiencing, be that stress, be that depression, be that lack of energy. And as I dive deeper into the subject, I realized that, you know, this wellness technology sector is worth billions, and the wellness industry in general is worth trillions. So what has happened, and many people listening to this have probably encountered a number of helpful apps that they use. There's things like Headspace that's very popular, Calm, even things like Fitbits that are not necessarily apps but products that help to monitor your daily step count or fitness, or even apps like Strava. They may have heard of those and seen them as a solution to something that they are trying to address. But the point of my article and the point of this podcast is to explore why that isn't always the most positive approach to take. And yeah, let's share with people what we found, I guess.
Yeah, so where to start with it all, because there's so much that I want to try and fit into this episode. I think essentially the concerns that we have is probably a bit like where big organisations claim to have ways to solve what's a human issue solely with technology or largely with technology. And where there's a real problem that's been identified, in many ways, it's a great thing that we've suddenly realised as a collective group that people's mental health is struggling. And it goes hand in hand with our physical health. It goes hand in hand with our emotional health. It's all, people are starting to sort of look at it a little bit more holistically as a whole person. We're not just one facet of ourselves. You can't just fix one facet in isolation. And we've got to look at the bigger picture. And when it comes to things that are presenting themselves through our, whether it's our mental health or whether it's through our physical health, because there are symptoms that are appearing that are the ones that we are more obvious to us, but actually the reason for those physical symptoms is rooted in our thinking and is then rooted, because of our thinking, in the behaviours that we're taking, and then it's manifesting and presenting itself as a physical symptom, which is very often the case with burnout, for example, which can get sort of talked about as a mental health condition, but actually the reason that burnout comes about is because of lots of combined things. And you can't just, as you like call it, like band-aid something with a short,
check out my article on balanceology.uk. I did coin the term well-being band-aid.
But with something that's really just essentially a quick fix. If we don't get under the surface and we don't get to the root cause of something, and by root cause, I mean where it all really began. There's always something that I've, through my work, I've found is there in the background that isn't in the conscious awareness, but that through certain talk therapies, through certain processes, like the ones that Dylan and I use, we can get to that place that quite often is quite far back in somebody's childhood, is where things really began, but they don't become aware of that until they go deeper with somebody supporting them. And I think the thing is, we can just skim the surface and do very sort of surface level band-aid type fixes on things, but if we don't go into that, what's behind the behaviours that are leading to the health issues, the mental issues, the problems in life in general in the first place, then we can't really resolve things, we can't really heal from them, and we can't really move forward. And so we're not slating these tech apps. We do see that they do bring some benefits and that they have a place. But what I think our concern is that people will just sort of well wash with this stuff in the way they're greenwashing stuff and not really make any difference to the bigger situation.
Yeah, so a couple of points on that. I guess, you know, I'm a bit of a cynic with these things, and whilst they may have been created from a good place to try and help people, these kind of tech startups and companies often are looking at the bigger picture of growing their business to kind of sell it for hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. So I think there's always that element of it that puts me off even kind of trying to engage with them, because they're ultimately a product and they're just using the wellness industry as another means to launch an innovative product, which isn't a bad thing necessarily for those people or for the people using it, because it's still offering a service. But I do feel like, yeah, companies can get on board with that as well and just pay lip service to their sort of well-being strategy by offering either integrated systems or advising employees to use apps such as the ones we've talked about. So yeah, I think it is a dangerous kind of slippery slope sometimes, isn't it? Having this abundant tech to solve every issue for you, and a company saying to their employees, yeah, just go and use this app, that'll do, you'll be sorted. But that doesn't really get to the root cause, like you said, Jane.
Yeah, and on a sort of piggybacking on that,
there's room.
One of the contributing factors to burnout, for example, is the overuse of technology and these apps you access through the very devices that people are needing to use less. So my concern with them is I'm trying to help someone and encourage them to find ways to detach from all of their things, whether it's a phone or a laptop,
all their devices,
all of the devices. Because I've got people, when they do a questionnaire before working with me, who will indicate that they go to sleep with their smartphone next to them. Okay, many people, they put it on flight mode, but the fact that it's there right next to them, it's the first thing they see in the morning, it's the last thing they see at night, is their phone. And it's the temptation when it's so close by to quickly just switch it on, look at something, check something. There's so many studies that I won't bring into this conversation to do with the effect of our eyes looking at a screen, not just for the duration of time that we do in a day, but actually how that affects us, particularly at nighttime when our bodies are trying to switch off and unwind, and they stimulate and they create the reactions in our body that are completely opposite to the ones that we want to be welcoming in to help us to go into sleep mode. So it's also, my concern is also about the fact that we're becoming even more dependent then on these devices, more so in that it feeds that addiction to them.
But that's a wider issue of consumers looking for the quickest, easiest fix.
Yeah.
And if you see an app that is branded in well-being and tells you it's going to improve your anxiety levels and reduce your stress and calm you and relax you, it seems like an easy thing to do, just do that, and you've kind of ticked that box. But that's one of the other points I kind of mentioned in the article, was it just then creates another stat for you to be obsessed with, or another thing that you have to fit in your day that you have to do. You know, I've done my 1,000 steps or whatever it is. I don't know how many steps people do, but it's probably a lot more than 1,000. I don't do a lot, so I sit down a lot of the time.
Exactly.
I do walk the dog a few times a day. But yeah, it's another obsession, another thing that people become focused on. I mean, I'm talking broadly, not everybody's like this, But in that busy working world where we've got targets to hit and we're trying to improve performance, squeeze out those little marginal gains, it's another thing to worry about, which the whole point of well-being is it's something not to worry about. It's something to take you away from that space and reset. And I think that's where it's slightly worrying when you get drawn back to the very thing that is causing a lot of your kind of issues in the first place. Mm.
And there are so many correlations between the amount of time that we spend on devices and the friendships, the relationships, and ultimately the decline of those because of the tendencies through social media to feel like we're comparing ourselves to others. And therefore, through that compulsive comparison, we actually end up distancing ourselves from others. And then those relationships aren't nurtured and nourished in the way that we organically would do if technology wasn't there in place. So, and what that really ultimately comes down to behind all of this is happiness. When people are feeling these rising levels of loneliness, of anxiety, of stress, of overwhelm, whatever it is that's going on and kind of presenting itself in those ways, when we're actually happy and feeling joy, those are absent because those two emotions don't coexist in the same space. So it's really a desperation for reconnecting with happiness, which is a state of well-being, being well. And I think that we often, because of, like you said, it's that quick fix, that inclination that we can quickly go on something and resolve whatever the issue is in our life these days, that we think that technology can solve that for us, that technology can then just bring that happiness back.
And in the interest of balance, there are obviously aspects of certain apps that can be very helpful for reminding you or suggesting to you to put your phone down and establish those connections. And as a sort of gateway into more deeper root cause level kind of well-being, maybe they are quite helpful in that instance because it's just getting you to think about well-being, and then by telling you to remove yourself from the phone, it may be a good pathway into deeper work.
I'm just thinking, if your watch actually said to you, right, take your watch off and go and sit with a tree for
I think
10
some of
minutes.
The apps do though.
But they don't, do they? They ask you to look at the screen and focus on your breath, but you do that while you're still looking at the
or
watch.
Listening. And you're always kind of connected, yeah. And I think you need to take the earphones out sometimes and just walk and listen to the sound of the birds sing if you've got that opportunity. But I think the sort of road I was going down is that we don't need more stuff sometimes, do we? We need less stuff. Mm. And deeply within inside us, we know intuitively really what we probably need. We need a break from things. We need to rebuild those relationships that have suffered because of whatever reason or whatever situation you're going through. And it's not always the easiest thing to do, is it? To reassess, and you've got so much else going on in your life, you don't realise how important those other things are.
No.
And it's not until you do that work that you realize, oh God, it was so nice to catch up with so-and-so. It's so nice. Well-being doesn't have to be running a marathon every day. Well-being doesn't have to be eating healthy food all day, every day. Well-being can be going for a coffee with your friend, or can be picking up the phone and speaking to a relative that you haven't spoke to for a while. It doesn't have to be this big, massive thing. And I think it's often important to remind yourself of that because we live in a world of social media where everybody's comparing everybody to everybody else, whether you're our age, in your 40s, or you're younger, you do see it. You're not immune to it, unless you're completely off-grid with that kind of stuff. So more so than ever, we're having this impact of seeing what other people are doing and comparing ourselves unrealistically. But if you go and speak to a friend, it's a very different situation.
Yeah, I think that actually takes us back to that human-to-human connection,
man,
which is such a primal need. It's something that
we were evolved with, community, connection,
yeah,
relationships, help, support.
Well, and it's why
physical,
why the pandemic has so dramatically damaged so many people's sense of well-being, because we've been disconnected physically from the people that we love and care about, and we haven't then had those opportunities to sit down and have those personal connections, whether that's sitting down, like you say, and having a coffee with someone, going for a walk with someone, even just the workplace. It's why remote working has been so hard for so many, because a lot of people, that was their human connection. If they weren't coming home to somebody,
yeah, the office environment, the banter, social interaction.
Literally,
yeah,
in isolation, yeah, all day, all night, for whatever periods those lockdowns were. Yeah. So there's been a kind of a cumulative effect of that as well that's been carried over, along with the uncertainty of, well, will we ever go back into that at some stage? You know, will the workplaces have changed? They've seen so many benefits from remote working, because remote working has suited other people really well. And it's all about the balance. You know, there's hybrid working. For some people, they'll be desperately wanting things just to go back so they can go back into a workplace all of the time.
It's interesting you say that, because in a Deloitte study, I think it was, it said that the number one thing that employees wanted, this was across thousands of workplaces that they surveyed, the number one thing that came out of that survey was that employees felt the thing they needed the most was flexible working, mm-hmm, but it was one of the things that was least met,
yeah,
by their employers.
Yeah.
And I think because flexible working can mean something to you and can mean something different to, yeah, me, for our different circumstances, but, yeah, it works for both of us.
Yeah.
Yet at that stage, pre-pandemic, it definitely wasn't as high up on the agenda as it is,
yeah,
now. And we've had, you know, one of the positives, I guess, of the pandemic is we've been able to trial that.
Yes.
At a sustained amount of time,
yeah,
to see really how well it worked. And some, yeah, companies, you know, originally thought, yeah, this could work forever. And others are now slowly, you know, saying, mm-hmm, it's not,
yeah,
working. But at least it was trial.
And again, it is about balance. It always seems to come back to that. Which is the reason for the name of our business, right? Balanceology. But it's not an
TM.
Have all your workforce work from home all of the time, or have them all in all of the time.
It doesn't have to be extreme like that, does it?
No, and that's the same for most things in life. It's about finding the balance. We have a habit as a collective society to polarise things. You're either for this thing or for another thing, but you can't be something in the middle. Apparently that doesn't,
that's
quite
how,
work.
Yes, because so many rules in a workplace, like, or in any walk of life, are so hard and fast. It's like, no, that's the rule, you can't do it. But, yeah, but if you can meet me in the middle somewhere, actually it could be mutually beneficial. And I think, yeah, you're right. And slowly, well, actually not slowly, I guess the thing is, and, you know, another thing that I discovered when I was doing the research around this article was that in the US alone, the annual cost to US healthcare due to people being burnt out in the workplace is somewhere in the hundreds of billions.
Yeah.
It's like 120 to 150 billion. And it's a huge amount of impact that,
yeah,
that is having. So subsequently, businesses now are being forced to take this very seriously.
Yeah.
But the wellbeing agenda is there and strategies are there, especially for big, big corporations, I guess. But for medium-sized businesses or you know, smaller, less international businesses, how are they looking at it? And these tech solutions, like I talked about before, platforms that you can integrate into your IT software at work, how are they really helping? And what impact do they have versus, you know, changing the culture in an organization?
Yeah, and that is the place really for people to go to really track and investigate more deeply by asking the employees. It's the only way they're ever really going to know, is to find out from their own staff, like, how are you actually feeling? How are you doing? And often that needs to be done anonymously for people to feel brave enough to say how they really feel, what's really going on under the surface. The great thing, as we sort of mentioned, although it's come through such a difficult period for people, but the great thing is that these conversations are now starting to happen more than ever before, and they're starting to notice that there's a direct correlation between when somebody is well in themselves, so that sense of well-being, and that person's production, their performance, how well they're doing in their role, contributing on all the deliverables that they're responsible for, and their feeling of success in life in general. So when we are well, we're essentially more engaged with whatever's in front of us, whatever projects we're either employed to do or are choosing to do. Whether people are doing work that actually lights them up is another topic, but in general. And so whenever people are well, they've tracked this, and it looks as though there's a direct correlation, in the sense that when people come back from, say, burnout, they are typically around 20% more productive, and they have nearly 50% less days off. So when people are getting the rest they need, when they're addressing the things that were out of balance, that were then presenting as all these different symptoms that were indicators that they weren't doing well, they weren't coping, they were struggling, and that's, you know, I just want to say that's okay. But whenever people identify that and got to the root cause, resolved it, had the rest that they needed, brought balance back into their life, then they're off 50% less of the time. So it's a kind of no-brainer, really, for organisations to place well-being at the heart of the employee journey during their time in that organisation, however small or long it may be, because obviously people now aren't staying in jobs for life in the way they did in our parents' generation. But for however long that person comes in and is part of the business, it's in the business's interest, and it needs to be where the societal shifts happens. It's like it's in everybody's collective interest to look after each other and do whatever needs to be done for us all to stay well.
Exactly. And I think it's got to be genuine from the organisation as well, though, right? Like I said, it can't just be this kind of tick box exercise where they're thinking about the well-being of their staff, but really they're still completely focused on their deliverables as a business. It's like anything, you look after the people and listen to the people that are contributing to your bigger goal. They're going to support you better in that, but they're also going to feel better in themselves in it. And it's a real conundrum, I guess, for businesses that are kind of new to this whole issue, because, yeah, like you said earlier in the podcast, mental health awareness has risen so much in the mainstream over the last few years, especially off the back of the pandemic. And companies now are having to educate themselves on these things. And obviously that's where businesses like ourselves can come in and help them. But for businesses that it's actually quite a cultural shift for them, how do they, that's where they're kind of engaging with some of these tech platforms that offer, like I said, software-based solutions where they can basically get staff members have access to maybe booking in with a online therapist or something during their working day, or they get tech support through that.
So that's a big difference. So something that actually enables a human connection, great, right? Yeah. And as a starting point, it's better than nothing to have something.
Yeah, so absolutely.
The apps that, say, for example, you can use to prompt you to do a certain thing at a certain time, like breathe, which is...
Well, you kind of need to do that to live.
Sounds as a joke. Yeah. Yes, and yet so many people go around so much of the time not breathing the way our bodies actually are designed to breathe. Breathing up high in the chest, really shallow, frantic type
A1 breathing.
Breath. No, A1 breathing is what they need to be doing. That's right deep down into your belly, like breathing like we did when we were little babies, right? So whether the app is sort of prompting you, triggering you to take a kind of a micro check on yourself, am I breathing? You know, am I sitting correctly in my chair? Have I been up from my desk for the last 3 hours? Or am I holding onto a Wii that I desperately needed to let go of hours ago? You're looking at me really weird, but so many people, when they survey on this, sit holding on to needing to go to the toilet because they don't feel they can even afford that moment to go and have a loo break. And
That's tough, though.
But so the apps can be great for bringing it into our awareness that we're not breathing, that we're not going and getting whatever physical needs we have met, the basic physical needs of drinking water, going to the loo, stretching our legs, moving around, changing our focus from a screen to looking out the window, or doing something that's good and beneficial and keeps us in balance. So they're a great starting point for that, as long as you allow them to then prompt you to become more aware of actually the reason these things are all out of whack is there's a big out of there's something bigger that needs to be resolved. And working in a workplace where I feel like I have to eat my lunch at the desk because that's what everybody else does. So I can't, even though I feel I know I should go and have it somewhere else, I feel, well, while everyone else is doing it, I can't. Those are the things we need to start tracking and noticing and raising.
But you can see then how a wellness app kind of slots into that, because the person who doesn't want to leave their desk because they don't want to be away from their work to go to the toilet, they're going to find an app that they can just look at their desk a lot more useful and helpful to them initially, because it suits that mindset that they don't want to, you know, they don't want to stop working or whatever. So something that's quick and easy on the phone, it's kind of like not ticking the box of wellness, but it's kind of like, well, this could help me. I know I need to do something about my wellness. This could help me. I don't have time to do anything else.
And there is the biggest gift that these apps could give if people are aware of that, that if you're needing an app to help you take a break, if you're needing an app to help you breathe, if you're needing an app to give you a guided meditation to help you fall asleep at night, then there is something bigger there that needs to be resolved. And you owe it to yourself to go there and figure that part out and stand up and speak out and help create more of the shift that needs to really happen societally to really resolve why everyone's burning out.
So let's talk about solutions then off the back of that. So if that person has come to that realization through using an app, say, and they're not going to necessarily know about what therapy or what method they're going to use to get to the root cause, they might not even know that there is a root cause yet. They're just thinking, okay, whoa, this is a light bulb moment for me. I need to do something about this. What's the initial sort of inner work they can do before even approaching a coach or approaching a therapist of some sort that they could do just to start that journey of exploration?
I think really simply slowing things down. Nature knows how to restore and regenerate itself. And we all do, because we are all nature. And when we can use the changing seasons as our life coach, that can be our guide, because it tells you everything you need to know to slow down on the days that feel heavier and are darker and get more rest. And then when things start to wake up again, moving into the spring, just getting yourself moving that bit more, moving with the changing seasons. And that's sort of me broadly speaking in terms of a year living in somewhere like the UK where you have a change of seasons. But within your own body, there are changing seasons in each day, in each week, in each month. I mean, for women listening to this, your menstrual cycle is one of the greatest gifts in this sense of an internal guidance system around when you need to slow down, when you can step more sort of vigorously outwards and engage more. You'll notice that there will be an internal winter, an internal spring, summer, autumn that coincides with your menstruation. And if you align with that and move with that in terms of it being okay to withdraw a bit, to cocoon a bit when in the run-up to when you menstruate, and then after you've menstruated, you start to feel that bit better in yourself, that's the time for the meetings where you put yourself out there, for the big projects where you've got your creativity coming to the fore. But we don't do that. Life isn't set up to support that in that way.
Society's not set up to support
that.
No,
it's like, yeah, we've got to be on all of the time, all year round, every day, all day. It's got to such a stage where we just need to press a reset button inside ourselves and restore what we already instinctively and intuitively know. And yes, people can come alongside us and help us with that journey, and that's what, you know, we enjoy doing and is skilled to do. But even if you haven't got access, for whatever reasons, to work with somebody who that's their passion and their skill set, and they can, you know, help you make that journey, it's actually all already in there. All you need to do is prioritize listening to you, and it's as simple as removing what's unnecessary
and all the noise that's around us, and, you know, and all of the noise, like just the, you know, media, the social media, the apps, that everything that, not just wellbeing apps, just talking about everything that you're kind of involved in, that actually, you know, 25 years ago maybe wasn't anywhere near that level mm-hmm. that it is now, and just stepping away from that and being able to reset. So just to summarize, Jane, we're not saying that wellbeing apps don't have a place and that they're not helpful in some instances, but they're just the first step, or could be the first step, towards a broader look at your own well-being and discovering really what the root causes of whatever issue you're going through. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that you can make a change, and just any change, but making some change is the start, because it's
just make a change.
Well, one change leads to making another change, and it's like
small
treat
steps.
It gently, little steps. Looking at the things that you don't absolutely need to be doing, and allowing yourself to release some of those, you have more time for your own self-care. And as you said, that self-care can take any shape or form. Something that feels like it's nourishing you and that it's nurturing you and is good for you, you'll know what that is for you. Everyone's
exactly. And
different.
And it's not a competition. That's the beauty of it. You're basically essentially working towards a feeling and working towards a place that you have probably been before in your life, where you felt really good, happy, energetic and exuberant. And I think there's so much beauty in that, because it's not like, oh, I have to do this and this, and this will happen. You start these small little steps and you'll see the biggest gains.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure. You don't put no pressure on yourself to do it. You just do it and see where it goes, and maybe in 6 weeks' time, 6 months' time, the difference in you, mm-hmm. just by making small little changes and, listening a bit better to yourself. So a bit of a heavier episode than usual, Jane. You didn't let me do my usual sort of wisecracks and jokes, which is annoying, because that's my favourite bit. And most of the listeners, I'm sure, that's their favourite bit as well, Jane. They don't come here for the advice, do they? They just come here for a laugh. But it was a serious topic, all jokes aside. And I think the great thing when we talk these things through is we're learning ourselves. Mm. And this whole topic in itself was quite interesting to me. And through the process of talking today, we went from talking about the apps to getting to the root cause. And I think that's quite an important thing for anything that you're going through.
Yes. And I think in essence, what the key sort of takeaway is to, yes, use these apps if they come your way, but use them to help you remember to disconnect so that you can reconnect.
Love it. Thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next week on the Art of Balance podcast.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed our episode on WellTech and the discussion around wellbeing apps and their place in the recovery process from not just burnout, but depression, anxiety, and stress in general. And if you'd like to find out more about the work we do around burnout for corporations and big businesses, you can go to our website, balanceology.uk. On the website, you'll find a whole host of resources, ranging from podcasts to blogs to videos, but also you'll see our corporate brochure, which outlines our four most popular packages for helping businesses prevent and recover their staff from burnout. Thanks again, as always, for listening to the podcast, and we'll catch you next week. Take care.